Yes, I am the world. I'm John Batchelor. Hotel Mars, Episode N. Dr. Space himself is here, my colleague and co-pilot, and we're very pleased to welcome our good colleague and longtime friend, David Grinspoon of the Planetary Institute, to help us understand on the position from Earth to Mars and from Earth to Venus. What are we waiting for? What are we learning from the probes that are on the surface or in orbit or being built on Earth to head to orbit or on the surface of these two planetary bodies? This is the inner solar system, the rocky and wet stuff that we look for in exoplanets. So, David, a very good evening to you, Dr. Grinspoon. I begin with a report that got my attention. This is from NASA Goddard. Mars has two small moons, Phobos and Deimos. Phobos is gradually spiraling inward, drawing about 6 feet closer to the planet each century. Within 50 million years, it will either crash into Mars or break up and form a ring around the planet. It was the crashing part that got my attention. David, does this put a limit on planetary colonies on the surface of Mars? Can we imagine Phobos as a collision object? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John and David. Yes, it's a interesting question. It's sort of a fun thing to think about. 50 million years is a long time, so I wouldn't say it's, you know, this ranks really high on our concerns about going to Mars and surviving there and living there sustainably, if that's what we choose to do. We've got much more immediate problems to solve, but it is interesting to ponder if we were there or our descendants were on Mars at that time, what would that be like and what challenges would it present? You know, the first thing that occurs to me is that the most likely thing is that as Phobos's orbit decays, it will break up and form a ring around Mars. And that would be really cool. I mean, visually from the surface, it might be really striking, the sunlight reflecting off the particles in that ring. So the first thing it might present is sort of a, you know, a tourist attraction. Visit Mars, see the amazing ring. When that stuff starts to fall, what will it be like? Well, one thing it won't be like is the asteroid that hit the Earth 65 million years ago, which interestingly was probably roughly the size of Phobos, but that thing was coming at interplanetary speeds and, caused a massive crater and environmental disruption, and the rest is history. We're talking here about something that's not coming at that speed because it's already in orbit around Mars. So it's not at interplanetary speeds. And if it breaks up in orbit from tides, which it probably would, then we're talking about lots of little things falling from orbital space, not from interplanetary space. So lower velocity and lots of little things. So you still wouldn't want to be hit by one of these. And I'm picturing maybe a zone, an equatorial zone of Mars beneath the orbit of this moon, where things might be hazardous for quite some time. There might even be some sort of exclusion zone if this is going on. But I would imagine if you were at a different place on Mars at a different latitude, then there'd be less of a threat. This is just my sort of hand-waving reaction, but that's what I'm picturing.
So life on Mars in 50 million years is going to have a challenge. Dr. Space, do you have a question for David?
Sure. David, if we managed to terraform Mars and the terraforming lasted for 50 million years, what impact would that have on Phobos coming in to crash on Mars?
Well, it's an interesting question. If that terraforming actually includes pumping up the atmosphere to be thick like Earth's atmosphere, so that on the surface of Mars now, it's very, very thin. So the atmospheric pressure at the surface is about 1% of Earth's atmospheric pressure. If we pump it up to be an Earth-like pressure, then I'll say two things. One, it would probably hasten the decay of the orbit of Phobos as it starts to interact with the upper atmosphere, and the drag from that atmosphere might hasten the decay of Phobos. But also, that thick atmosphere would screen out most of the impactors, unless there's some really large chunks. The smaller chunks would simply burn up in the atmosphere. So then what you might have is a meteor shower every night on Mars for, you know, for thousands and thousands of years as that moon decays from the breakup of Phobos. So a thicker atmosphere might make it happen faster, but might also sort of ameliorate the effects on the surface.
All right. Coming back from 50 million years in the future, right now, there is a very charming YouTube available from a colleague of yours at NASA Astrobiology about our search for evidence of life in the past, life in the present on the surface of Mars. And the summary of this report is no, 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 and maybe. Where are we, David, in the search for something that once moved?
Well, I think the YouTube you're referring to is features Dr. Heather Graham at NASA Goddard, who is a wonderful astrobiologist and a great communicator, as you can see in that video, very dynamic. And basically, you know, what we've learned about Mars is mostly discouraging if you're looking for Earth-type life on the surface. The radiation would certainly kill you and I if we were just out there on the surface of Mars for very long, not hiding in a lava tube or shielded in some way from solar flares and so forth. And it's also just very dry and very cold. So, you know, there are probably Earth bacteria that could live on the surface of Mars for a while because bacteria are so hardy. But certainly animal or plant life or anything more complex than that would have a real problem. If we're talking about underground on Mars, that's a different story. If you can get deep enough so that you are shielded by enough rock so the radiation isn't going to get you, and also down to a level where there may well be liquid water, and we have a lot of reason to believe that there is subterranean water on Mars, although we're still trying to figure out how deep and what other kinds of chemical conditions there are at depth on Mars that might be hostile to organic life. You know, there's some chemicals like hydrogen peroxide and other things called perchlorates, which can also break up organic molecules. So, and we found some evidence of those in the Martian soil. So I would say, you know, we're certainly not in the most optimistic part of our, you know, trajectory of belief about life on Mars, but we also can't rule it out, both because there are places on Mars where it could be hiding out and because obviously we don't know everything about life in the universe, having only had one biosphere to study.
David, Dr. Space?
David, if there are professors at different universities working on ways to try to identify life as we don't know it and then be able to recognize it, what are the likelihood possibilities of maybe life not as we know it being on Mars? And would there be any way to guess at how that might be affected by anything that happens with Mars or that we do on Mars?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to remember that that everything we think we know about life is based on this one example from Earth. So it's an interesting intellectual exercise to ponder, could there be completely separate chemical bases for life where it's not dependent on DNA and proteins, that kind of thing that we depend on? Maybe it's not even carbon based. Maybe it's based on some completely other kind of chemistry. Nobody's designed another kind of life that really works, but that doesn't mean that nature hasn't created it somewhere. It may just be a limitation on our own imagination and cleverness. But one thing I'll say is that the reason why radiation is damaging for life is not very specific to life as we know it, in the sense that what radiation does, you know, cosmic rays, we're talking about the really intense energetic radiation that comes from outer space that on Earth we're shielded from mostly by the magnetic field and by Earth's thick atmosphere, but that it reaches the surface of Mars. And what that does is it breaks chemical bonds. So if you imagine that life is made out of any kind of chemistry, then radiation is going to be dangerous for it. And, you know, in our particular case, it breaks breaks up DNA and will give you mutations and cancer and so forth. But if you imagine some other kind of life that doesn't use DNA, it's still going to need chemical bonds, and those chemical bonds are still probably, I would think, going to be threatened by cosmic radiation. So I would imagine that that's going to be a challenge for life, even as we don't know it. But again, as we've discussed, that may just mean that it needs to be hiding underground a little bit.
David Grinspoon is a senior scientist, is the senior scientist at Planetary Science Institute. Formerly, he was the Baruch Bloomberg NASA Library of Congress chair in astrobiology. We're going to Venus now because David is participating in a NASA probe being readied for Venus and the clouds of Venus, and also some new information about the surface of Venus. Dr. Space, David Livingston is my colleague and co-host. This is Hotel Mars, Episode N. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.